Hello and welcome. This is module 2 of our Creating Deeper Intimacy and Trust in Relationships program, and today we'll be talking about understanding divine feminine and sacred masculine archetypes and integrating the shadow sides of each of those.
Now, just to right off the bat define what an archetype is. An archetype is basically the form which embodies the fundamental characteristics of a thing, psychological and emotional qualities of thought and behavior. So it's a way for us to simplify and get a handle on and get our minds wrapped around things that are complex, such as people and how we show up. We all carry within us divine masculine and divine feminine qualities. We're going to start first talking about the divine feminine side.
And there's a quote that kind of talks about integrating all of this, which is by Matthew Fox. And he wrote, "When the sacred masculine is combined with the sacred feminine inside each of us, we create the sacred marriage of compassion and passion in ourselves." Which I thought that's really beautiful. And this is what it's all about, is healing and integrating and balance, creating balance.
Exactly. And each archetype also exists in all of us at some form, in some form or another, and at different levels. But we primarily will identify with one archetype as a dominant one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And we've started to see a reawakening, because it always existed back in like thousands of years ago. The sacred masculine was a way of being, a common way of being. And since the pendulum swung and the feminine was subdued, then the masculine has gone out of balance and it's become an ego masculine. And it's beautiful that we're seeing the sacred masculine reawaken, and men and women both getting more in touch with their spiritual essence. So, and we've seen how out of balance it is, where the male gender has been assigned to gods and divinity so much throughout culture over the last couple of thousand years, or maybe even three.
And to go back before that, you'll find that there's quite a more even representation between the masculine and the feminine in the deities.
Yes, and the goddesses were very, very much honored a few thousand years ago. You even hear some of it coming through today in the names like Isis and Diana and Gaia, Brigitte, Venus, and the whole moon goddess aspect that's becoming much more in the forefront. So let's get started with the feminine archetypes first. And I'd like to lead out with, like, rather than just going into the feminine archetypes, there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. And the first one is the triple goddess, which is more the aspect of the woman and in her development rather than her archetype specifically, but it's really important for creating balance. And the male aspect, the god aspect in all of us, has its equivalent to these. So I'm going to go through the female and just know that the masculine has its own equivalent. So if you've got the maiden, you've got, you know, the boy, the mother or queen, you've got the king aspect. And these are all about chronological age, really, but that we have to integrate all three aspects into our way of being. But predominantly, you're going to identify with whichever one is a part of your chronological age, but you still have to integrate all three aspects. And the third one is the wise woman or crone. And then on the male side, you've got the wise man or old fool, so to speak. That's, you know.
Right. We have our seasons that we stand in, you know, as a mother with children. The mother's going to more strongly identify with the mother part of the triple goddess.
Yeah. And So with the triple goddess, let's talk about we already mentioned that, you know, in order to fully embody the higher self, a woman must embody all three aspects of the triple goddess: the maiden or inner child, the mother queen, and the wise woman crone. And the best write-up that I have ever found on this is written by Jen Rohde, our mentor, and it's really beautifully done. So I'm just going to kind of summarize how that, what she wrote, and it really explains it very, very well. And so many women really want to embody their higher self and their queen, but they don't always realize the importance of balancing and nurturing all three aspects of themselves. But it is indeed really important if you want to be able to manifest what you desire in your life. The maiden, the inner child, is actually your manifester, your creator, that aspect of the goddess. And the inner child has limitless potential, needs freedom, and needs self-care. So for example, you know, pampering yourself, getting your nails done, going shopping, taking a bubble bath, or playing with makeup, clothes, those kinds of things. Those are all aspects of the inner child, the maiden. And the self-care is so important, not just for the inner child, but to really be the queen, you have to have that integrated. She doesn't know limitation or restriction, learns and absorbs information very, very quickly. You know how kids just absorb everything, they pick it up so fast. And so to, yeah, just keep that inner child, keep in touch with that inner child, and it's really, really important. So the maiden is a really open channel or vessel. She's romantic. She wants to be wooed. And that's the part of you that wants the fairy tale, that really wants that romantic aspect. She still believes that she can have what she wants. She's easily changeable and might have different looks from one day to the next. It's all perfect. She's connected to the sacral chakra and gut intuition. So her sexuality is really, really an integral part of the inner child maiden. And she is sovereign in her sexuality. She uses her sexual energy to manifest. That's all part of that manifestor creator energy. And the second aspect of the triple goddess, the mother queen, she serves many. She needs to have servants to refill and balance herself. It keeps her from being too rigid. And so she needs to be able to delegate, because there is so much that she is doing for so many, that to have her needs met, she needs to be able to delegate some of that. She needs trusted advisors, people to support her in what she's doing, so that she is able to heal herself and help her process what's going on with her. So these trusted advisors, or support staff, or you know, her closest friends that support her, that's really, really important for the queen aspect of the goddess. She doesn't want to do it all on her own. Actually, she can't. There's so much to do. So she needs those trusted advisors, the support, and she needs her partner. She deserves to have that. It's not, you know, she can do it on her own if she needs to, but really to feel the balance, she wants that partnership in her life. She's magnetic. She draws people and things toward her. And she's a nurturer, a healer. And she's really connected to the heart chakra. And just really that unconditional love. And that doesn't mean she's without boundaries. It just means that she's really connected to the heart chakra and the unconditional love. And she loves her children but she also holds the boundaries. She's not their best friend. And she must have healthy boundaries. She's really grounded, stands in her power, speaks her truth. She's really solid in this. She's the energy that makes the king who he is. So she's the one who molds the king to be the king that she needs in her life.
She nurtures him. She supports him.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets to support her as well, yeah, in her role.
And the boundaries, it's essential that she has the boundaries and that they both work together in really creating who each other is and how they show up. Many women are looking for their king, but they're not standing in their queen. And so it's part of that. Your perfect partner can't see you if you're not really showing up as who you're meant to be. And so they draw in people who really aren't what they're looking for. And this is true in both single and partnered women. So you've got women who have partners, but their partner's not showing up in the way that they want them to, because they're really not standing in their queen. They're not holding the healthy boundaries. They're not being powerful. The queen holds the container, the space, the womb of her home, her business, her healing work, or whatever it is she's doing. She holds the container. She holds the space. And she holds space in a way that others may not notice unless they're really paying attention. She's not meant to be best friends with her children. She's a loving guide. And she must have loving and healthy boundaries with them, not creating codependent relationships with them. And the crone or wise woman, she's the aspect of the goddess who's seen and done everything. She's very connected to the third eye chakra. She's all seeing, all knowing, clairvoyant. She sees the past, present, and future. She doesn't have a filter. She's got no shame. She's very straightforward and says things that might be considered offensive if they're said by the maiden or queen. But she gets away with it because she's so wise and respected. And to others, she may seem inappropriate or eccentric, but she doesn't care. She doesn't, you know, she might come off as really intense or have a quirky sense of humor. And she needs to be respected for her wisdom, needs to be honored. And, you know, I'm describing all of these, which are the integrated ways that people show up when they're in their each stage of the goddess, like as the crone or wise woman. I mean, we've all seen older women who are not showing up in this way, and they haven't integrated those aspects of themselves. So, and society tends to fear the wise woman. They tend to really dishonor the aged, both men and women in society at this point in time. The elderly are not given the respect that they deserve. And so society tends to fear the wise woman, and we've seen this come out in previous times with, you know, the witch hunts and everything. There's much fear around the third eye. People are afraid to see. And so when they come across someone who's very connected with their third eye and very expressive of her intuition, then people fear that. She might appear as ugly or unattractive, but she's very comfortable with herself. She doesn't need approval from anyone outside herself. She knows everything is within her, everything's inside her. She doesn't need permission or anyone to tell her what to do. And when she's not in her wise woman, she's afraid to remember who she really is. And there's not 100% correlation between chronological age and the aspect of the goddess that is dominant. But you do want the primary goddess to be aligned with the chronological age. So, for example, postmenopausal women that refuse to embody or embrace their wise woman or crone. They're not aging gracefully. They're holding on to and trying to be the maiden or the queen when really to be integrated, they would be primarily embodying the wise woman. And that's kind of the summary of the maiden, mother, crone aspects of people. Very, very important information to integrate and be balanced as a woman. And now, going into the archetypes of the divine feminine, there are actually six. And the first one is the goddess creatrix, which is all about new possibilities, manifesting, healing, and unconditional love. The shadow side of that is a woman who is manipulative, paranoid, and filled with self-doubt. So if she's not integrated, then that's how she'll show up. The queen or leader archetype, she's lover, mother, and warrior. She's a big picture seer. She's a realist, heart-based, congruent between spirituality and life. And she's in service to others. And the shadow side of the queen is the tendency to want or need to control others, and hasn't learned to love herself. And we've all seen people who show up in that way, women who show up in that way. The lover is passionate and sensitive, romantic, balanced between masculine and feminine. She's compassionate. She's emotionally mature and sensual, connects with others, and lives in the moment. The shadow side of that is she hasn't been able to free her inner child and let her be seen. She's self-absorbed, overly concerned with outward appearance, comparing herself to others all the time. She's insensitive and sometimes manipulative. And so just in looking at these shadows and seeing and noticing those patterns coming up, we can tell in ourselves or in others what needs to be healed so that they can really integrate and show up in the way that they're meant to actually be. Another archetype is the mother, which is nurturing, compassionate, loving, stabilizing. The shadow side of the mother is she needs to heal from wounds from her own mother. She's not accepting the importance of self-nurturing, not just nurturing others. She tends to be codependent in her relationships. The priestess is the next archetype. She's a healer. She's connected to higher realms, grounded and discerning. She's connected to source and inner knowing. She's heart and body aware for access to knowledge. So she's, very, very well connected to her body. The shadow side of the priestess is that she may be overly subjective in life and not well grounded. And, we've all seen or experienced people who just, they're really living in the higher realms of energy. They're not well grounded. It's like they're all floating up there in the spiritual realms and just not connected with reality. And we've all either seen or maybe experienced that feeling at some point in our lives. And as we mentioned before, we all have these aspects within us. We just have one of them that's more dominant, or maybe two. The final divine feminine archetype is the warrioress or Amazon. And she is fiercely protective. She's athletic, she's assertive, she's courageous, task-oriented, and really good with personal boundaries. When she is disintegrated, her shadow side, she creates chaos and drama. She's subject to anger and jealousy. She withholds love, and she has an inability to forgive. And she really needs to connect and learn from the inner child. So she's definitely not in touch with her inner child. So that's the last one.
Now, the divine masculine archetypes have some similarities to the divine feminine. And we've touched briefly on them, but for instance, the king archetype is the fully conscious male commanding leadership and respect. We associate the king archetype with authority, order, law, and direction. And yet he has two shadow wings that are identified as the tyrant or the weakling. The immature boy version of the king is the divine child that can also be a child tyrant or a weakling. So one interesting thing about when we look at the shadows is when we encounter the shadow sides, when we encounter people who are embodying their shadow sides, if we're aware of the archetype that they're standing in, we can see their potential. So if we find somebody who's a tyrant or who's a weakling and who stands in that place, we can see that they, what their capacity is, what they're capable of, and maybe better able to, if we're a parent figure, guide them in that direction or support them if they're a friend or in their growth and direct them wisely in the direction they can go. So another archetype is the warrior archetype, and he's seen as the holy campaigner or the activist. He is one with courage, persistence, devotion to the cause. And yet he has two shadow aspects as well. That's the sadist and the masochist. And his immature boy version is the hero that can descend into the bully or the coward. And not only, you know, might we see these in other people, well, we can see these shadows in ourselves as well. And whatever level they are, even if it's not our primary archetype, we may find that we hold different elements and we can see where they come from. Another is the magician archetype. Consciousness, growth, transformation can be associated with the third eye of insight and intuition. And yet his shadow side might show up as the manipulator or the innocent who denies, you know, accountability. And his immature boy version is the precocious child that can descend into the trickster or the dummy. And as we hopefully mature spiritually, we can move out of these shadow sides. But one thing to know about the shadow sides, I know I keep having diversions here, but the shadow side isn't bad and it isn't wrong. It's in order to have a shadow, you have to have something that is casting that shadow. And so being aware of it, embracing it, acknowledging that part of you, and even loving it, lets you move beyond it. It lets you mature.
Allows you to heal it.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll always be there at some level, but it needn't be something that gets in the way of your maturity and your connection to others and your ability to function in a mature and an effective manner. And the final archetype that we're going to talk about, although you can research, there are many out there. There's different points of view, and they're all valid. When it comes to archetypes, they're just ways to get to know ourselves. The final one is the lover archetype, who is sensual, delightful. He appreciates goodness. He sees truth and beauty and identifies and is drawn to that. And yet his shadow sides include the addicted lover and the impotent lover. And his immature boy self is the Oedipal child that can descend into a mama's boy or a dreamer. And we can see how, if we give it some thought and we look back on our own emotional development and spiritual development, as well as others, we can see that how all these archetypes and how all these shadow sides can surround us, are all around us.
And as we mentioned earlier, seeing the shadow sides and knowing about the archetypes helps us to really identify, as Michael mentioned, the potential that is there for someone when they really step into spiritual maturity. How this applies to relationships. Women in particular have a tendency to really fall in love with potential. They see that person, they see who they really are, who they could be, who they could show up as, and they fall in love with that rather than really acknowledging where that person is and how they're choosing to show up. And yes, by recognizing the shadow sides, we can walk with someone through a process of healing that and integrating all of that and becoming that spiritual adult that shows up in a powerful way. But that person has to want that too. We all have our divine right to choose. And if that person isn't choosing to show up in their potential, we can't make them, and we actually have no right to try to make them. Because who are we to force our will upon them if they're choosing a different path?
On the masculine side of things, there's another element that has recently come up in the public discourse, and that's, you know, when we look at tribal societies and older societies, they had a process of initiation for men. And this is how men, you know, it was a challenge that they went through and how men got welcomed into the community of men and found, in their own way, found their archetypes that they got to identify with. And it set them in a path of maturity and stepping into their place in society at a much earlier age than what happens today, when men are sort of cast adrift, no clear idea of what it means to be a masculine man and to stand in his masculinity. And sometimes it can take 20, 30 years for them to figure it out. And there's some wonderful books that can that discussed this. Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette co-wrote a book called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. Robert Bly wrote a book called Iron John, a book about men that discusses the whole in a sort of a almost a fictional manner, discusses the entire concept surrounding men's initiation. Richard Rohr, another wonderful author that talks about, he's got a book called From Wild Man to Wise Man. This is a body of literature that's bringing back into our society the concept that men deserve to have a process of initiation that welcomes them into manhood.
Mm-hmm. And that is actually being recognized now, and there are some amazing men who are creating opportunities for men who are on an enlightened path to actually experience that energy of an initiation and a powerful embracing of their masculine power, but in a way that is honoring of all, and especially honoring of the feminine in their lives. One of those is Destin Garrick. He's got an amazing program where there are at times retreats that are held that are really an initiation into the sacred masculine energy.
Right. Almost, you might almost look at it as like a boot camp.
Spiritual boot camp for men.
For masculinity, yeah.
Yes. And teaches them to embrace their sexuality in a way that is powerful and honoring of the feminine as well. So right. it's really beautiful, and we're so excited to see more of this happening in the world. And the Divine Feminine seems to have really come into focus sooner. And that's what's been awakening the sacred masculine. The women exactly. are the leaders in this. So it's amazing.
Women must stand in their power, in their femininity, in order for men to be able to more fully stand in theirs.
And yes.
the way of the patriarch is going
on
away.
Its way out. Yes. Yeah. Yep. And it's like we mentioned earlier, the queen creates the king. So that's awesome. We love you, and we hope that this has really created some things for you to contemplate and to benefit you in your relationships. And we look forward to connecting with you again in the next module.